It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Our first question, 1 + 1. Yes.
2.
Incorrect. Yes.
Multiculturalism.
Well done, Simon. Next question, what is 3 × 3? Yes.
9.
Wrong. Yes, Penelope.
Gender equality.
Very good, Penelope.
Is this a joke?
You think gender equality is a joke?
No, but isn't this a maths class?
Don't be so racist.
I just asked a question.
We don't ask questions. Questions are offensive.
Sandy Rios with you. You've heard that before on this show because it captures so creepily and sort of funny and sort of tragically what's happening in public schools. And I have not spoken about the latest trends recently, and we're going to fix that today because many of you have kids in public school. You're seeing some of this stuff happen, and you don't even know what's going on. Who could explain it except educators? But I want to share with you the opening paragraph of a new article that is called The Latest Creepy Orwellian Education Tactic. And this is the opening. It sounds like a sci-fi movie. Altering behavior and personality by surreptitiously embedding psychologically manipulative messages into a computer platform. But according to Education Week, that's what mega publisher Pearson did in 2017 to over 9,000 unwitting college students. And this episode foreshadows what's coming soon to a K-12 classroom near you. I've asked two experts in the education field to join me this morning to talk about this and what's happening in public education in American schools. The first is Dr. Karen Efron. Karen is a pediatrician. She's also the president of Education Liberty Watch. And the other is Jane Robbins, who's a senior fellow and an attorney at American Principals Project. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
You know, I'd really like to know, before we jump into this, if you ask me how I got involved in and what the hot button was for me and how I got involved in education, it was what I saw happen with my son in public school. He is 30, almost 38 now. So Goals 2000, invented spelling, no punctuation. That was my first alarm. But Dr. Efron, I would really like to know, how about you? How does a pediatrician become president of Education Liberty Watch? What was the hot button for you?
It was the Goals 2000 standards back in the late 90s and early 2000s. They were being implemented in our schools in Minnesota, where I lived at the time. And it was the precursor to Common Core and what we're dealing with today, which was setting the stage for all of this data gathering and psychological manipulation and bad teaching that's happening.
Yeah, just to kind of recap, Goals 2000 was something that George Herbert Walker Bush was all about, great cheerleader for it. And, of course, his son Jeb has become a great cheerleader for Common Core. But Goals 2000 was part of it. It's pretty complicated, but it sounded good. It was like we were going to educate our children better because our scores were falling. So we all agreed with that. But what we didn't realize that it was outcome-based. In other words, they wanted to sort of program kids so that the kids would say, would believe and think what someone else thought they should believe and think. So that's just kind of an idea and kind of lays the groundwork for our conversation today. Jane Robbins, I want to know about you. How in the world is an attorney? Probably, I don't know what your history is. I've talked to you before, but how did you get involved? What was the hot button for you for education?
Well, mine came through the organization that I work for, American Principles Project. And this was back when Common Core, the national standards, were first being adopted and implemented. And we started working on that issue because we saw that there were a lot of problems there, not only with where the standards came from, but where they were going to take us. And once we started tugging on that string, then everything started to unravel about what's going on in public education, especially with the data collection and doing it through technology and longitudinal databases and the various different types of instruction designed not so much to impart academic knowledge, but rather to shape students in their attitudes and mindsets and skills. And the more we kept digging, and then the more we worked with various parent activists and grandparent activists across the country who had done so much research on all of this, we started to realize that this is a huge problem. And there are sometimes we feel like a hockey goalie, and there are pucks coming from all directions, and it's so hard to fend off everything. But that's how I got involved.
You know, it seems, I don't know if you all would agree, we cover, you know, the left's movement everywhere, capital A left. And they are deeply entrenched in everything, but it seems to me that the education arena is kind of ground zero for the gains they've made in this country. And it seems like they've put decades of planning, and they have executed their plan almost with perfection. I'm going to ask you guys some random questions. I know there's two of you, so just jump in when you feel like you want to comment on this. But I want to just kind of set the stage for what's happening now. Common Core was the last big battle, and it was waged furiously. And as you know, Jane, the states were so involved in that, and really the state leaders were the ones, I think, that managed to whatever halting there's been or slowing down, it's been the state leaders. But what is the condition? Where are we with Common Core now?
Well, Common Core is still out there in most states. There have been a lot of or several states that have said, we're going to get rid of Common Core, but by and large, what they've done is just rebranded. They've moved a few commas around, and they give it a new name. In Georgia, they don't call it Common Core anymore. They call it the Georgia Standards of Excellence. And this is what's happening in various states. It's a marketing thing. So by and large, the standards are still there. They're not performing very well. Students aren't performing very well under the standards or under the assessments that go along with it. And a lot of the Common Core structure is falling apart just because the tests were the thing that were going to tie everything together, because all of these kids across the country were going to take the same tests. And states have gotten out of those tests. So when you're not assessing kids on the same things, it does make it more difficult to have standardization across the country. So it's a little bit of a mess right now, but it's unfortunately too optimistic to say that states are getting rid of Common Core, because most of them aren't.
Dr. Ephraim, Betsy DeVos was a very controversial pick for President Trump to be Secretary of Education. I think for some of us, because she was such a strong proponent of Common Core, and now she's gotten in, and it seemed, my personal opinion, not watching this like the two of you do, is that it's been a mixed bag. I'd love to know what you think about Betsy DeVos and what leadership and she's brought to the Education Department that you like and don't like.
I like a lot of her statements, especially the speech that she gave at the American Enterprise Institute not very long ago, where she actually admitted that federal involvement in education has been completely unhelpful. And she came out and mentioned, you know, Goals 2000. She mentioned No Child Left Behind, you know, the legacy of the Bush
the Bushes, and but she also mentioned Clinton and Obama as contributing to this, and that they didn't, that these things did not help. She mentioned that she has said on various occasions that, especially after the Parkland shooting, for instance, that we have to re-examine the Obama-era lax discipline policies. That's a great thing. And so she's done, she has talked a fairly good game. Unfortunately, and the other thing that I should say is that President Trump and Secretary DeVos have tried to actually financially limit the role of the Federal Department of Education by submitting budgets that are getting rid of some of these really bad programs, including a lot of the touchy-feely social-emotional programs that are very dangerous to privacy and to freedom of conscience. So all of those are good things. On the unfortunate side, she and the president have appointed and staffed a lot of the department with acolytes of Jeb Bush's Foundation for Excellence in Education. And she is known to have worked very closely with Jeb Bush in several organizations and promoted Common Core. So while she's talking a good game, it seems like the actual movement to do something is still fairly slow.
Well, that's the, you know,
and
it's the
part of that is Congress, and part of that is is her, and you know, it's hard to say.
Yeah, well, there's been a duplicitousness that's been disturbing. I think, you know, she had advocated for Common Core for so long, as you said, and Jeb Bush was one of the big champions. He himself made millions of dollars advocating for Common Core, and then as soon as she's nominated, she says she doesn't support it anymore, and that's just very hard to comprehend. So we just hope that she will do some good things in spite of the duplicitousness. Jane, before we take this first break and then get into our main topic, I'm curious, is there any way to quantify how American students are doing in terms of their achievement?
The most recent indication of that is the NAEP test scores that came out a couple of weeks ago. NAEP is the National Assessment of Educational Progress. It's the test that is given to selected students. It's not given to every student in the country, but it's given every 2 years in fourth and eighth grade in reading and in math. And we had seen NAEP scores go up pretty well before, say, into the 90s. And then since Common Core has come in, and it's now been since 2010, the 2015 NAEP scores dropped. It was the first time in many years, if ever, that the scores actually dropped. And then the most recent scores from the 2017 round of testing came out a couple of weeks ago, and that showed pretty much stagnation. There was a little bit of improvement in one area, but not major, and everything else was pretty much flat. And then, of course, you go into the individual states, and it's different. But we're treading water, and we're treading water from a low level to start with.
And there's some very good reasons for that, which we're going to get into. You alluded to it earlier. It's not teaching content, but trying to manage personalities. It's just amazing the story we're going to tell. My guests are Dr. Karen Ephraim and Jane Robbins. And we'll continue with this latest creepy Orwellian education tactic when we return on Sandy Rios in the Morning.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
the person with the highest mark will be flying to New York to present their paper at the World Mathematics Summit. Well done, Penelope. 6 out of 10. You too, Simon. 6 out of 10.
Hey. Be careful. You've been staring at her for 10 seconds.
What?
It's a form of harassment to stare at a woman for more than 15 seconds straight. And when I use the term straight, I don't mean to offend any persons of a non-traditional sexual preference. And when I use the term non-traditional, I don't mean to offend any persons who oppose historically normalized...
Okay, I get it.
Unfortunately, Sunshine, your research assignment is only worth a 1 out of 10.
I've used Fourier transform and mathematical methods in electronics to analyze the electrodiagrams of at-risk patients and calculate their risk of experiencing a heart attack. I mean, it's a new method, but it could potentially save thousands of lives.
7.
You barely even read it.
You used red pen.
What?
Red is considered offensive in many religions.
Why would you belittle everything down to a singular color? Well, humanity is a rainbow of beauty and spirituality.
Yeah. Okay, fine. 7 out of 10, but that still means I get to go to the summit, right?
The marking process isn't over yet.
All right, that's from a movie, or a little video clip called Education, spelled with a K. It's produced by Neil Kolhatkar, who is an Australian. It's really, really, it probably demonstrates as much as anything the really creepy stuff happening in schools really all over the world. It's not just in America. My guests are Dr. Karen Ephraim. She's the president of the Education Liberty Watch. Again, she's a pediatrician in addition to that. Jane Robbins is an attorney who serves as senior fellow at the American Principles Project. And together they've written this article that we're going to talk about next. The next kind of focus is on this Orwellian education tactic. And let's start this way. Let's talk about, I've heard this tossed around a lot. Now, Jane and Karen, you both know that the danger in when we talk about this stuff is that educators have lingo. And if you're not an educator who lives in that world, you can hardly understand what they're talking about. And it seems like that never changes to me. And so our great challenge will be we're talking to regular people who are not into all of this edu-speak. So let's start by just kind of defining a term, because part of what you're talking about here is what we call social emotional learning. Social emotional learning. What in the world is that? Karen, you want to just tell us what that is first?
It is simply the psychologizing of education. It is a focus on non-academic goals and attributes of students. According to the organization that pushes this the most across the country, these components include self-awareness, self-management, social awareness, relationship skills, responsible decision-making, including ethical decision-making. Well, the problem with this is that this is what families are supposed to do. And if you have schools doing it, you have to wonder what the norms and values are going to be that they're going to promote through this, especially that last one, decision-making, including ethical decision-making. You have to ask, by whose ethics are they going to teach kids to make these decisions?
You know, that reminds me, Karen, of something that I'm sure you remember too. But when we were dealing with Goals 2000, the other buzzword was values-based education. It's like we weren't quite sure whose values, but it was a great buzzword that they used. And so it seems like it was the same but different. Jane, how would you... I recognize you're an attorney and this, you may not go back a long way with this, but you know a lot. So is this new in terms of education? We used to teach reading, writing, and math, and now we're teaching them emotional learning. Did that happen in classrooms historically in this country?
Not historically. It certainly wasn't happening when I was in school. It does go back a ways. I mean, you talk about the values, values clarification was a movement. So the impetus has been there for a while. But what is really new with the social emotional learning, as SEL as it's called now, is the technology that you can put kids on screens and have them interact with very sophisticated software programs, and those programs can be used to alter and to shape mindsets and attitudes and beliefs much more effectively than just having a teacher say something at the front of the room. And one of the really disturbing things about that is that parents generally don't even know that this is happening because they have no access to what is showing up on that screen. They can't see what their children are exposed to. So it's kind of values clarification on steroids.
All right, so I think people understand that concept, but it would be good to have an example of that. So, Karen, can you give us one? How exactly, what are you talking about? What's so objectionable? The kids are on a computer, and they're doing their work, coming along, and so how does this exactly work, social-emotional learning?
Well, even Education Week, which is funded by Bill Gates, one of the biggest proponent and funder of Common Core in the world, admitted that social-emotional learning is being used for activist purposes, among others. And they admitted that social-emotional curriculum, even in math, was having a social justice emphasis. And that's the problem. Other pieces of it, you know, and other topics that they get into are environmentalism, the GLBT issues, universal health care, you know, just a whole range of social issues that they are promoting from one perspective. And that obviously is a major problem.
Gun control. Yeah, that's a... I remember, again, going back to my own experience with this, when this started happening in math and sciences, you know, it seems like science just abdicated to the environmental movement. It was enough of teaching, you know, facts and science. We had to teach them how to think about it. And then in math, even, they were introducing thinking problems that would, while they were supposedly introducing something you had to add, subtract, or do algebra with, they were actually persuading you to a certain point of view in the text of their math questions. But this
like
seems
population
to have
population control.
Yes, yes. So, but now they're going a step further, right, Jane? Because you are describing something that's electronic. I still don't quite comprehend how this happens with the computer.
There is a report that people who are interested in this could access. It's a report that came out of U.S. Department of Education in 2012, and it's called Expanding Evidence, Approaches for Learning in a Digital World, or something like that. And the report goes into detail about the way that technology can be used to gather data on children's thought processes when you put them on these sophisticated computer platforms, and also how it can reshape what they're thinking, their behavior, that sort of thing. And so if people believe that we're black helicopter people and making all this up, they need to read this report from the U.S. Department of Education. But let me give you an example. One of the digital avenues out there that is really being pushed in schools is gaming, video gaming, because this supposedly will help kids learn content, but it will be more engaging. That's one of the buzzwords. You've got to have engagement. So kids will enjoy doing that, and they'll learn sort of in spite of themselves if they're playing a video game. Well, there are people out there who are sort of gurus in the gaming world who point out, when they're talking among themselves, how gaming can be used to change the way children look at the world, the way they think, and the way they act. The example that was given by Dr. Jane McGonigal, who is out in California, is that there was a game called A World Without Oil, and kids would play this game, and the more time they spent on it, then their actual behavior in the real world would become mimicking of their behavior in the game. And so they would start living their lives the way their avatar or whatever lived and behaved in the game. So these people are very serious, that they think that this is a way that they can actually create the kind of people that the government wants. And gaming, when parents hear that their school is going to be using gaming for whatever purpose in their schools, not all of the games are going to do this kind of thing, but that's the direction that it can go in if parents aren't aware of what's happening.
Now, there's a big publisher called Pearson, which is new to me because, I'm not as connected with this as the two of you are. But Pearson's a mega publisher, and according to Education Week, they have instituted this software where they are actually doing like social research without permission with students. Can you describe that to us, Karen? What's that all about? And just weigh in on that if you would.
They are experimenting by inserting positive motivational messages in the software that is seen by some college students and not others. It was basically a cutesy little message exhorting them to keep trying as they're solving math problems. It's called the growth mindset is the SEL technical term for that. But they were doing this and trying to see who kept going and who didn't. And this manipulation, this psychological manipulation, really only had a modest effect on the students that had them. They solved a few more problems than did the control group, but the control group actually attempted to solve significantly more problems than did the guinea pigs. So these kinds of experiments, if you actually look at the scientific basis and leave out the ethical problems of not seeking consent, don't work. That's why social emotional learning shouldn't be used, even aside from all of the ethical and parental rights problems that this creates. It doesn't work.
Well, I have to challenge that, because it seems to me we just made the case that when you try to manipulate kids through games or sort of get into their thoughts and program them, as it were, that it does modify their behavior. So Jane, can you make a distinction on that? Am I missing something?
Well, the problem is that the research is all over the place out there, and it boils down to what you're trying to get kids to do. If you're trying to instill some sort of personality change, such as what Pearson was trying to do. They were trying to instill more confidence and more, you know, go get them, I can do this no matter what kind of thing. That doesn't seem to be working very well. If, however, what you're trying to do is to instill certain mindsets, certain beliefs in kids, then it can have some effect. And that's what we were talking about with the gaming and with the issues that that the various technology platforms will be using, perhaps whether it's global warming or whatever. You can very definitely change people's beliefs based on this.
Okay, well, this is interesting. And I guess the point is that they are invading the kids' computers with experimentation, social and psychological, without permission, without the knowledge of the parents. It has potential to be very dangerous because they're doing it overtly in the classroom and in the school curriculum and all of that already. So I'm not sure what they have planned to use the computer. It can't be good. My guests are Dr. Karen Ephraim and Jane Robbins, and we're talking about this latest creepy Orwellian education tactic. When we return, let's talk about this. There are so many things to discuss about what's happening. Data mining is one of them, and all the information they're trying to gather on your children and mine. We'll talk when we return. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Now, because we live in a society based on equality, the total amount of marks are to be divided equally among our students.
You've got to be kidding me.
Well done, students. We're all equal. We're all average.
Yay!
But then who gets to go to the summit?
Oh, we haven't added our privilege points yet. Don't you know anything?
That is correct. Now, Penelope, you are female, so that's plus one privilege point. However, you are white, so that's minus one.
But I'm also bisexual.
Plus one. That leaves you with a total score of 6 out of 10. Simon, unfortunately, you're straight, white, and male.
And cisgendered.
Yes, so that's minus 4 privilege points, which leaves you with a total score of 1.
It's only fair.
Now you. You're male, and I don't like you. So that's minus 2 privilege points, but you are brown and sexually ambiguous. So that's plus 2. That leaves you with a total score of 5.
Wait, why am I sexually ambiguous?
And finally, Sunshine.
I'm gay, I'm trans, I'm Asian. I'm overweight, I'm lower class, I'm unintelligent, unattractive. I've got hairs on my nipples, and I also got body odor. And I can't really run properly or tie my shoelaces by myself. And I once watched a pigeon die.
Wonderful, Sunshine. That's 13 privilege points. That leaves you with a total score of 18 out of 10. Well done, Sunshine. You're going to New York.
Hooray, Sunshine!
We knew you could do it!
All right, that's yet another episode, another little example of the movie, the little video, Education, spelled with a K, produced by an Australian comic named Neil Kohatkar. And we'll put that on our Facebook page. We've posted it many, many times since I've been on the air here, but we'll put it on again because it really makes the point better than our conversation can. The article we're featuring, which we'll also put on our Facebook page, is called The Latest Creepy Orwellian Education Tactic. And the writers have joined me today, Dr. Karen Ephraim, pediatrician, president of Education Liberty Watch, and Jane Robbins, attorney and senior fellow with the American Principles Project. Karen, before we get into, just quickly, you told me that this whole business of social emotional learning actually started in Goals 2000. I didn't know that.
It did. One of the goals of Goals 2000 is by the year 2000, every school will promote partnerships that will increase parental involvement and participation in promoting the social, emotional, and academic growth of children. Notice that academic is the third in that trilogy.
Well, they made their goal, didn't they?
They sure did.
Yeah, they surely did make their goal. All right, so this is nothing new. This is what, you know, I have to ask, Jane, I always wonder, I kind of know, but I don't, who's doing this stuff? Who's the little man like the wizard behind the curtain pulling all the levers to have orchestrated something so vast and to have altered the landscape of American education and pretty much derailed and ditched it and turned our children to mindless robots? Who did that?
It started, I guess you would say, and we actually, I and a couple of colleagues at my organization wrote a book that traces what happened with American education, beginning with the early 20th century progressives, John Dewey and that crowd, and that changed the focus of education and what schools were told they were supposed to be doing with children, and we don't have time to get into all that. But as of what's happening now with all of the technology and the data collection and that sort of thing, it's really an alliance among various entities. One would be the government. One would be corporations who are benefiting from all of this data collection that they're getting through the digital platforms that they're selling to the schools or giving to the schools in some cases because they get paid in the students' data. And also there are private foundations out there that are very wealthy and that have taken it upon themselves to transform education. And Karen mentioned Gates, and there are other foundations that Carnegie and Hewlett and various people like that, that are also financing this. They helped finance Common Core. They're financing all of these new innovative things coming into the classroom. And some of it is purely in terms of getting the data, and it's for a bottom line. We can do wonderful things with this data, or with the corporations. We can make money with this data because we can advertise to people and we can know our customers inside and out and that sort of thing. So it's not all ideological. Some of it is, some of it isn't. But it's just an unholy alliance among people with different agendas. And the kinds of things that are being done in through Common Core and the philosophies of Common Core, that sort of thing, are really ubiquitous in state education establishments. It's not just the federal, it's the state ed establishments, because the education schools teach this. This is what they teach. It's based on the John Dewey and goes back 100 years. But as of data collection, one thing that I wanted to mention is that this is not a partisan issue necessarily when it comes to privacy and data collection. And there are people on the left who are very, very concerned about the intrusion into students' personal mind and space and the collection of data on these students to be used for whatever purpose that they don't even know about and certainly didn't consent to. So it's not just people on the right. It's not just conservatives who are worried about this. It's more left-leaning people as well.
I can understand that because I know they've, in the last however many years this has been happening in my lifetime, they started asking kids about parents, about views, about religious views, all kinds of things, very invasive questions. And we're old enough to remember the Soviet Union doing something to their children and separating children really from parents and turning parents against children. So we've kind of watched that. And let me ask you, Karen, I know that Every Student Succeeds Act, some would say that further enshrined government collection of personally identifiable information. Give us an example of, besides what I said, of what kind of information is being collected from kids.
Religious affiliation, political affiliation, lots and lots of health data. And now that the schools are becoming kind of a hub, especially with the 21st Century Community Schools Act, which is Title IV of ESSA, the goal is to have, and this was discussed both by Lamar Alexander back when he was governor of Tennessee and Arne Duncan when he was Secretary of Education, that they want to have schools operating 6 or 7 days a week. And so they want it to be the hub of not only education, but health, employment training and all of these things. So there's all sorts of data that gets commingled. And when the health data and the mental health data and the social emotional data, you know, questions to answers to these questionnaires all gets melded in, it isn't protected by any kind of medical confidentiality. There's the potential that all of this really private, sensitive stuff can get put into these state longitudinal databases to follow a child for life.
Yeah. You know, I remember
confidentiality.
You know, I remember this is something I remember covering. I was so alarmed by this. They were doing these, as you just mentioned, questionnaires to even young kids, junior high kids, about very invasive sexual questions, things that they shouldn't even be thinking about. Mostly, of course, it was about, do you really think you're a girl? Is it possible you could be something else? Think outside of the box, that sort of thing. So this would give people an illustration of how this started, and I can only imagine that it's worse now. Jane, I want to turn to you because Mark Zuckerberg was just in D.C. testifying before Congress, and the tie-in here is that Facebook is a tech giant partnering with the U.S. Department of Education to do what? What are they adding?
Facebook wants data. That's its business model. It runs on data. That's why we can all get on Facebook for free, because Facebook is just vacuuming up all of the data. It can tell everything about us by what the number of likes, the things that we like on Facebook, or what we post, all of those things. And that is gold. I mean, data is gold, and that's how they get paid. So when Facebook goes into schools, which it is, many, many schools use Facebook not only for posting communications between teachers and parents and administration and all of that stuff, but there are a lot of other platforms that are used in schools that jump off of Facebook. They connect with Facebook. You use Facebook to get onto to log into the other platform. And so that connects Facebook to whatever the student is doing on that other platform as well. And Facebook is just gathering the data. And this is something that did not come up at the hearing where Zuckerberg testified. To my knowledge, I didn't watch the whole thing, but I didn't see any report that anyone asked him, what exactly are you doing with all of the student data that you're gaining from your participation in schools? So this is, and of course, you know, Zuckerberg is going to say, oh, we have only the best of intentions and we keep everything private. Well, that's just baloney.
That's not true.
Because that's not how their company works.
Jane, we only have a couple of minutes left, but before we leave the topic of Facebook, can you quickly, if that's possible, tell us what, you know, with this Cambridge Analytica thing, without explaining this, they're going berserk over Cambridge Analytica because they think it was connected to the Trump campaign, and they're claiming that it mined all this data from 80-something million Americans. And so what does that have to do with students?
Well, whether Cambridge Analytica got anything from students or not, I don't know. Facebook gave them the data. Cambridge didn't steal it. But Facebook has similar types of information on students as it has on all the adults out there whose data was given to Cambridge Analytica. So we don't know what Facebook is doing with that data. We don't know what corporations or other entities are out there, organizations that are getting this data from Facebook. There's just we're just sort of trusting that they will do the right thing, and I would suggest that parents shouldn't be so trusting.
Karen, I just a last word from you. We've watched this now for a couple of decades. Do you see any glimmer of hope? Or are you pretty still pessimistic about what we're seeing on the education horizon?
The one area of hope that I see is that when parents and citizens see what is going on in their schools, they stand up. And when larger organizations see what is coming in legislation, they are standing up. There was a bill in 2015 and actually 2014 and 15 or 15 and 16 that wanted to codify doing social emotional research on students and making it part of the National Center for Education Statistics. And groups all across the country, including American Principals and Education Liberty Watch, stopped it because parents stood up. So that's the hope that I see.
All right, let me just say then, Education Liberty Watch is the organization that Dr. Karen Ephraim, our guest, is part of, and Jane is part of the Principals Project. And you can get their information anytime. They publish great stuff. The article we're going to put, it was published by American Spectator, on our Facebook page, is the latest creepy Orwellian education tactic, which Karen and Jane co-wrote. And that'll get you started on how to share some of this stuff and try to do something about it in your... Still, we can do stuff about this locally. That's the good news. When parents get involved locally, you still have a tremendous impact. It's probably why... Jeb Bush didn't become the presidential nominee. I'd say Mountain Common Core more than anything. Karen Ephraim and Jane Robbins, thank you, ladies. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.